Good morning, freaks. Happy Bitcoin Saturday. Joining you slightly earlier than usual this week because I have a great crew in Nashville and we've had a very, very busy week and we have a very busy Saturday. So we're joining you bright and early. And if you're not joining us live, I guess you'll be listening to this later and I hope you enjoy the conversation. But before we get started, this is Citadel Dispatch, show focused on actionable discussion on Bitcoin and freedom tech. I'm your host, Matt O'Dell. We have no ads, no sponsors. We're supported by you, our audience, aligning incentives. None of that bullshit with SBF paying millions of dollars to the Block CEO and giving him a Bahamas house and buying out all the other investors. We don't do that bullshit here. We just fund it with sats from our audience without any middlemen. So thank you for supporting the show, freaks. We really do appreciate it. Couldn't do without you. The easiest way to support the show is podcasting 2.0 apps like Fountain Podcasts and Echo LN. Simply use it like any other podcast app. You search Citadel Dispatch, click that subscribe button, load it up with sats, choose how many sats you think the show is worth per minute. Those sats stream directly to my node. Extremely empowering seeing those sats come in. You can also support the show through something called Boostagrams, which is a lump sum sats payment that includes a message that I read out on the show. I read the top four, but they also, it's like an open comment board. Everyone can see everyone's boosts. Pretty cool. You can also support the show at satsperminute.com, which goes to my geyser.fund page. That has a live leaderboard that shows who's contributed the most through podcasting 2.0. Pretty cool. You can track it. You can see everyone's messages there. You can also donate separately there if you're not using a podcasting 2.0 app. So you can donate via on-chain or Lightning using Bitcoin. As I told you earlier this week, we actually broke geyser.fund's webpage because you guys support the show so much. So they still haven't fixed it. They said they think it'll be fixed on Monday. One of their lead devs is sick, but they said it's a priority. But don't worry, freaks. You can't see the leaderboard, which is unfortunate. Hopefully you can see the leaderboard next week. But you can still donate to the show. It's still going to my own node. So it's a non-custodial relationship. That's just a display interface, geyser.fund. So thank you for continuing to support the show. And one last shout out, of course, to the freaks who join us in the live chat. Dispatch has an interactive live chat. You are part of the show. You make it unique. That live chat is broadcast throughout all of our streams. So if you join us in the live chat, you can join either via Twitch or YouTube. Just search Citadel Dispatch on either of those apps. Or you can join us in our Matrix chat. That link is at CitadelDispatch.com. All the links are at CitadelDispatch.com. And just Citadel Dispatch is on every platform. Any podcast app, Rumble, Bitcoin TV, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, any platform, search. I know it's a bear market. I know it's a recession. I know times are tough. Can't contribute sats. Pressing the subscribe button, sharing with friends and family, leaving reviews. It all really helps. So thank you all. So before we get started, I just want to read out some boostergrams from last week. We have Eric99, 50,000 sats saying, stay humble, stack sats. Great advice. We have Vake with 25,000 sats saying nothing, but I appreciate him. Huge ride or die freak. We have Blockchain Boog saying, always enjoy when Paul is on the pod with 10,000 sats. And we have Ride or Die Freak Ape Mithrander with 4,444 sats saying V4V. Oh, and then we got to add this one too. We have Joel W with 3,333 sats saying hashtag beef bit boost. Very on topic for today's conversation. So I have three fantastic gentlemen in the studio with me in Nashville today. Two of them have spent the last few days here for the Beef Initiative. The third has joined us today because we have another cattleman-focused event. So let me get started with introductions. First, we have Jason Rick here from Rick Ranches. How's it going, Jason?
Just fantastic. Thanks again so much for having us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. I mean, you hosted us at your ranch, your family home in Colorado. So the least I could do is return the favor.
Well, and you guys have done such an amazing thing at Bitcoin Park here. And I just really appreciate everything you guys are doing. And it's every time I turn around, you kind of blow my mind, Matt O'Dell.
There you go. Well, gotta keep the foot on the gas. Hopefully one day I can invite you to my ranch instead of a campus in the middle of a city, but the pleasure is mine. We have someone, an absolute legend who I've known a lot about, but I finally got to meet for the first time about 20 minutes ago. We have Cole Bolton from KNC Cattle. How's it going, Cole?
Good. Thanks for having me this morning. It's a real, real pleasure. Glad to sit around the table with all these fine gentlemen.
It was a nice little surprise. I didn't know Cole was joining us until about 30 minutes ago, but that's fantastic.
That's kind of my MO. I always end up late at the party. So
it was funny because, and then we have, before we start, then we have Texas Slim, Ride or Die Freak. Everyone knows Texas Slim. How's it going, Slim?
Good morning, Matt. I've been here almost a full week, it feels like. So we've done a lot of content producing, and I was happy to see that Cole flew in last night, and he's been on the road for 20 hours, and then he caught a flight from Austin to Nashville. This is how he operates. Most of us operate in the Beef Initiative.
Yeah, I mean, what I was going to say was I thought it was funny because, I mean, we had Slim and Jason on Rabbit Hole Recap earlier this week. I was like, is Cole going to be in town for that? You're like, no. I was like, oh, on Wednesday, the day before, I was like, is Cole going to be in town? You're like, oh, no. And then this morning I woke up, I was like, Cole probably get in right before the cattlemen's meeting. Like, there's no shot I'll be on the podcast. So I just completely left it out of my brain, and then I got surprised. So
That's the thing about Cole, said it's his MO, and it's true. It's like every time that we're trying to accomplish something, everybody's like, where's Cole? He's working, man. That's what he's doing. And he doesn't really have a lot of time for small talk. And so it's always good when we can wrangle him in. So it's a pleasure.
The other thing, freaks, this is, so we got this dispatch. Then I'm running a seed signer workshop at Bitcoin Park in Nashville. Then the four of us are going to the U.S. Cattlemen's Association and presenting there on the Beef Initiative and Bitcoin. And then I'm taking a holiday break. So I will still be doing Rabbit Hole Recap because we haven't skipped a week in almost 5 years, and I don't want to break the record. But there will be no dispatches until the first week of January. And that will, when we come back, it'll be focused on mining for a couple episodes there, because we got a lot of great ride or die miners coming in to Nashville in early January. So with all that, let's get started. I think a good place to start is we had a fantastic Beef Initiative event yesterday. And we had a cattleman's feast the day before. So let's, to those who didn't join us, you know, what happened yesterday? What were we doing yesterday, Slim?
Well, we started off here at Bitcoin Park to give props to Bitcoin Park on Wednesday. We had the meetup, the open house.
Oh, true. We had that as well.
A lot of people show up. We had, you know, Holy Cow drove in from West Texas. They provided the food.
And in Weldon Warren.
Yep. And they accepted Bitcoin, which is, you know, new for them. So once again, ranchers coming into the Bitcoin space and getting some great education. And so what we did was, he kicked off the week there Wednesday, and then Thursday we had the Cattleman's Feast. And Cattleman's Feast is something that we've been talking about for a while, and we wanted to really kind of define what it is. And Jason and I, you know, back in Colorado, we started, you know, hinting around the ideas, like, we need to get people to understand the affordability of a Cattleman's Feast and what it is to actually basically purchase from your local ranchers. And then when I got back to Texas, me and Cole started talking, because, you know, we're going to have the Kill It and Grill It. And there's a really funny story behind the Kill It and Grill It, but we went ahead and coined the name Cattleman's Feast.
What is the funny story behind Kill It and
Grill
It?
You want to get there? Let's get there. It's early in the morning. It's funny. Well,
you actually said that before the Cattleman's Feast. You said there's a really funny story behind it, and then you never told us the
story. No, we haven't told the story.
We just need to get that out of the way, because I need to know what the story is.
Well, I'm going to let Cole go there. It's early, and he needs to wake up. So he's going to tell the story. It happens in a little town called San Marcos, Texas.
I'm drinking Pedialyte this morning. Sure. That's why I don't come to town very often.
What in Nash?
It was about 15 years ago. Excuse me. When I was in college, and they were going to have, they had this event called the Kill It and Grill It. And what it was is a bunch of frat boys would get together and they would all smoke meats, and they had different divisions. Well, they had one called the Raise It Division, and most of them were getting chickens or, you know, grilling or smoking briskets, and none of them owned any livestock. So I took it upon myself to introduce them to calf fries, which, or you can call them mountain oysters, you can call them a whole different things. Basically, when we castrate our bull calves, we clean the testicles and we batter them up and we fry them. And we won the division and got kicked out of the contest at the same time because nobody knew what calf fries were. And then after, because they taste like chicken.
They taste like chicken.
And once the judges found out, they kicked us out of the contest. So I've always kind of had a soft spot towards Kill It and Grill It. And that was what we named our Luling event.
There we go.
Everybody was trying to talk me out of it, and it's like, oh, we can't call it Kill It and Grill It. We can't. Well, no, there's a purpose behind it. There's a story. So,
but the other thing too is everybody that was saying, oh, you can't call it that, I'm like, well, because you got to kill it before you eat it, right?
Yeah.
In every reason except for bull fries. That's the only meat that you can eat that you don't actually have to kill it before you eat it.
It's so true.
Totally fitting.
Well, the bull gets a little depressed, but he doesn't get killed, that's for sure.
But the Cattleman's Feast was great. We had a gourmet caveman prepared the meat for us. The meat was provided by Holy Cow beef. But it's an interesting concept. So basically the concept, I mean, this is something that I discovered maybe like 4 years ago now. But like when you order directly from a rancher, you get the cut sheet.
True.
And like for someone who's not from that world, the cut sheet has all these cuts that you've just never heard of. So his specialty, or what his focus on with the Cattleman's Feast, was how to prepare these cuts you maybe have never heard of before and take full advantage of the offering, right?
Go ahead, Jason.
Well, the gourmet caveman is so creative, because even the way that he prepares it and the presentation isn't even typically what you would see in a recipe book, you know?
Right.
And that's the thing that you're only limited by your imagination. And that's the thing, you know, because I'm selling eighths, quarters, half whole beeves to a lot of brand new first time customers, exactly like what you were saying. They're like, well, how do you cook this? And how do you cook that? And so not only is it's awesome opportunity for them, but it's also very regionally different.
Right.
So my customers in Colorado are looking for different things than Cole's customers in Texas. And so that's the other thing that I really enjoy about, especially getting to talk to Gourmet for quite a bit, both of these 2 days that he was here cooking for us, what drives him, what motivates him, and what his creativity is, and how you can actually take that as the consumer and completely apply all the principles that he is teaching and preaching and presenting, so your family can enjoy all of that great meat as well. So it's just
it was delicious opportunity. But the presentation was intense. He spared no. There was a lot of attention to detail.
And that's
like a very pretty.
Well, Nicole came up with the, you know, kind of a philosophy behind it. And because what we want to do is make everybody understand is that, you know, we bring the gaucho, the vaquero, the South American way of cooking beef. There's a lot of different things that people have never been presented. They might have been to a Brazilian steakhouse at some time. But somebody like Gourmet, he brings kind of an international taste to it, but it's kind of a local type of skill set that you need. And it, you know, really the heart of Texas, right? And Cole came up with it to where we can have these all across the world, because everybody's going to bring their own skill set as far as preparing, cutting, and, you know, just like Jason was talking about, his cuts of the cow are different in Colorado than they are here in Texas. And I'll let Cole kind of talk about his cuts down in Central Texas.
Yeah, you know, as Jason was saying, a lot of it is geographically driven, because in Colorado you can't be outside smoking and grilling for 10 months out of the year like we do in Texas. And The only reason we have two that aren't is either it's raining or Texas shuts down if it gets below 32 degrees. So joke's on us. But, you know, one of the things that our company's done with our cut sheets is take our fabrication to even a further extent, because a lot of our customer base wants more steak options. Well, if we lived in Colorado, you don't want to sit outside in the middle of January grilling a Denver steak or a chuck eye steak or a flat iron on your grill. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So those three cuts all come from the chuck section. Well, in Texas, because we can, we like to provide those offerings because we don't eat near as many roasts because it's so daggum hot. We really, you know, we sell quarters, halves, and wholes just like Jason. We do a box program as well. And that box program has given us the opportunity to really go at our customers and allow them to try things such as the picanha or the tri-tip or bavette, terrace major. I can go on and on and on, but these are all great cuts that traditionally are turned into ground beef. So you take a cut that's worth, let's say your grind is, you're selling for $6, $7, $10 a pound. Well, now you have a cut that from our side as a producer, you can have another, you know, 20% margin, which we're not making a whole lot of money doing what we do.
Right.
So every little bit helps. And two, if you cook them appropriately, they are steak worthy. They are a higher end worth cut. It's just having to experience and test with that.
I mean, it comes back. Broken record. Education.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the comfortable position that we're in right now. And this year has been kind of we've been going in a lot of different directions within the Beef Initiative. We've been kind of organizing and kind of gunslinging the narratives and the signals and the messages. But right now, all of us collectively, especially in this room, we understand that what we're going to do in 2023 is education. And the education is something that can be enlightening in a way that, you know, we talk about. I mean, that Cattleman's Feast was a hell of an event. And we just had one down in Luling, Texas at the processing center there at Two Bar C Ranch. You know, we had over 200 people there. And people are starting to understand that this education thing is not so painful. What it is, it's a lifestyle. And that's what we're going to really bring out in 2023 as far as the Beef Initiative. Now we have a foundation of good intentional followers that want to be educated when it comes to, you know, the genetics of a cow, the cuts of the cow, preparation. We've got the team, we've got the ranch, we've got the beef, we've got everything that we need. And, you know, it's been a hard fought year, but we're excited, man. This education roadmap that we've got coming out is something I haven't ever seen in my lifetime.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
You didn't interrupt.
Education. I think Jason and I can have a good laugh for a second.
Who's ever vibrating?
So when we had the Kill It and Grill It in Luling, and I've heard some good stories about the Beef Initiative Summit in Colorado. I don't know about you, but I think my cows had some culture shock because they had never seen that many Priuses, Teslas, Lamborghinis. There were cars that they didn't probably know existed that showed up, but it along those lines, it's provided such an interesting outlet of education to folks that have never been able to experience the Western culture lifestyle actually in person. And I think we both believe that is a direction we're really trying to drive on our side.
Yeah, and that was when we were parking all of those Priuses and Teslas and all of those things at the ranch in this 3-foot-tall grass, you know, pull up a little bit more. We've got a bunch more cars we need to park in here. And of course, they would just be looking at my wife or my dad, you know, like, we don't want to drive our car off into the, you know, into this field. It's like, well, we'd only have so much space. Pull up, otherwise you're not going to be able to park. And just so that was, I love that. My wife was like, you should have seen the look on those people's faces in that Lexus when I was trying to get them to pull forward into the field and they didn't want to go.
It was kind of funny because Adam Curry came to the ranch, and the first day he came out, I was showing him around Austin and everything that we have. And my truck, if you've ever ridden with me, is always a mess. And he gets in, and it was a great experience. Well, fast forward a couple months later, he brings Mrs. Curry. And right when they get out of their car, and I don't remember what he was driving that day, but I said, "Mrs. Curry, I'm going to apologize. My truck's a little bit of a mess today." Adam didn't say a word. They get in the truck. He turned and looked in the back. He goes, "Cole, don't kid yourself. Your truck is a mess every time I have ever been to the ranch." I'm like, guilty, I guess.
Well, it's always it's fun. If you ever ridden in a truck from a rancher, it's fun because one thing you have is an aroma, and it's fascinating. From freaking dip spit to cow shit, you know, it's always a treasure map that you can always find through your nostrils. And so it's a badge of honor to be able to sit in a rancher's truck.
I mean, there was another element too when we were at Jason's ranch, was that there was no cell reception, which was nice. People were forced into actually communicating with other individuals face to face.
Well, and that's just it. You know, it was like, okay, everybody, you're going to unplug.
Yeah.
Just so you know, like if you're going to make the commitment to come, you just have to know that you're going to have to relearn how to talk to people and how to interact with people that maybe you've never met in your entire life. Because if you look at like the local farmers and ranchers that came to our event, coupled with the people who are the hardcore Bitcoiners, coupled with the people who are Beef Initiative members, all of those amazing things and the conversations that go with that. And they're like, you're right. Like there's no cell service. And yeah, it's not very good. And so just be aware, if you need to do business, maybe the coffee shop Wi-Fi for an hour a day will help you get caught up. But other than that, that's all you got.
Yeah, and the coffee shop's 45 minutes away, too.
True story. Of course, for us, everything's 45 minutes away.
That's true. In Nashville, everything's 12 minutes away.
I've noticed that, for sure.
People always ask me, they're like, wait, where was that thing? It's like, oh, it's 12 minutes from here.
So
it's,
yeah, exactly.
But let's go back. So we're talking about Cattleman's Feast. We were talking about on Wednesday we had... A great fireside chat between me and Slim with Q&A on the Beef Initiative. Then yesterday we had a full day of panels and discussions and Q&A. We had lunch that Gourmet Caveman provided us, Holy Cow Beef. We had an actual smoker outside in the park, which is great to see. First time we've had a smoker out there. Definitely not going to be the last. But you said something, Slim. You said people realize that education isn't this like painful experience. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is they're used to government schooling. And good education should never be a painful experience. Good education should be an enlightening experience. It should be something that is actually interesting to you. And I feel like the work you've done at Beef Initiative and what I've tried to contribute as well is in that vein, in that goal, right? Just hands-on, interpersonal education, like individuals helping individuals. And, I mean, you guys joke around, and it's always fun to shit on Tesla drivers. But there's definitely there's two worlds colliding, right? And there's people on both sides that are, you know, people from the city for overgeneralizations and people from the country kind of coming together, realizing there's a lot more in common. And that we can actually work together and help each other.
Yeah, and that's a good observation. And, you know, going back to you saying that, you know, you've done everything that you can, and just to give you a lot of credit, because you have. You saw this early on, and you've been a very good ambassador for us, so we want to say thank you. Not everybody takes that step to get that intentional with their messaging, and you've really put some time and some basically focus. And so thank you for that, Matt. But as far as, let's set a precedence and some perspective here. Throughout the decades that I've been alive, the American rancher has not had a voice. And whenever we say that, it's like, especially in 2022, they do not have a digital voice. And they've been a form of prohibition against them being able to have a decentralized communication structure to where they can't actually educate. Everybody that I've met from day one, from the foundation of the Beef Initiative, they always tell me, from Cole to Jason to Justin to the Warrens to everybody that really was the first movers into the Beef Initiative, say that they are educators. And so with this last 13 months that we've really been pouring it on heavy, we knew that we had to give the voice to the American rancher back. And that's really what this is about moving forward. And it's a collective effort. Like you say, I was talking to Jason the very first time, and he said one thing that he wants to for people to understand is the observational science of ranching and everything that he does. It is not the academic, it's not the government type of institutional learning. What it is like you said, the division of interpersonal communication in this country is an epidemic. And we're exploiting that, and we're bringing it to people that want to have market access to understand what the hell is going on within the beef industry, but actually what's going on with their food so they can support the people. And, you know, the people are, you know, Cole and Jason and Holy Cow and everybody else. They have a voice. And from here on out, they're going to have a very loud voice because we've been able to set up a structure that people can interact from the micro summits to having the Cattleman's Feast. Now we have the foundation, the I Am Texas Slim Foundation, was based on education.
Raised $1,400 for it.
I think we actually raised $2,000 yesterday as well.
$2,000 for it. Over 10 million sats yesterday.
Yes. Yeah. So between the auction and then just donations on the donation page, I think we're over $2,000.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's, and if you look at contributing to that and what that means for helping people get that education that they're learning for, get those people boots on the ground, getting your hands dirty, you know, sweat equity out in the wilds or Western Colorado, you know, that's pretty cheap.
Yeah. So freaks, that's, if you go to beefinitiative.com and click the donate button, you can donate with Bitcoin or your dirty fiat, very easily to the foundation. Jason was the first recipient of a grant from, the foundation endowment. He received a Bitcoin. So Jason, what are you going to do with that Bitcoin?
What's really exciting. So what we're going to do is we're going to install some housing to where we have a place to house interns, families, individuals, couples, to give them the opportunity to stay on the ranch and work side by side with me and my family so they can learn what we do and see if maybe that's something they want to pursue themselves. And the fantastic thing with that as well is not only are we going to be teaching them one-on-one, we have the opportunity to record all of that content and blast it out. So we're going to build out this educational series so we can reach as many people as possible.
And so basically the plan is to build this endowment to kind of replicate that and scale that throughout the country.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Jason was first. It's not like a favorite type of thing. It's more of a timing thing. We've got five or six ranchers that are lining up, and they're ready for, you know, this basically foundation grant. You know, second up is Cole Bolton. And what's very unique about this is that Cole's second in line, but the thing about it is Cole's grant is going to be totally different from Jason's. It's not some cookie cutter thing.
So and what is Cole's grant going to be?
Well, we're still in negotiations, but one thing that as far as what he needs, it's going to be something that he is fully integrated with. And I would say it's going to have to be something around processing, but I'm going to let Cole talk about that because, you know, opening up the processing there at Hometown Meats in Luling, you know, this is basically an awareness that Cole is coming up with, is that we know there's a shortage of people that do not have butchery skills. We know there's a lot of demand. There's a lot of people wanting to get back to that artisanship. So I think whenever we do move forward after the first year with Cole and, you know, the amount of, contributors that we do have coming in, that it'll be totally different than basically, you know, what Jason's doing, people to see his ranch. Well, maybe it's going to be through the processing center, but that's going to be Cole's precedence that he gets to set. What does he really want for the next 10 years that he can contribute as far as the education? It's not something that's going to be dictated to him by some multinational corporation or institution.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I think Ranching in Central Texas has its own challenges. You know, our place is 10 minutes, or literally we're 5 minutes from ABIA Airport, but it's a different style of ranching. And you know, it's getting harder and harder to expand in our area. Geographically, you're going to have to move out of Austin and really.
I heard the Tesla factory story.
Oh, yeah. That one's a good one. I'll come back to that one. But exactly what Slim was saying is we want to really try to start directing folks that are looking for a career path and participation into butchery, because it is a dying trade. Used to trade schools, you could go to welding school, you could go to electrics, or you know, go to like TSTC in Texas and get an actual trade degree, and butchery was one of them, and it's no longer offered.
But the processing centers used to essentially be butchers, right? Small butchers in different towns.
Yeah, exactly. So now what we have, we joke about it in the industry, but we just have box meat cutters, because they all work at local grocery stores who get primals cut from these big plants. All you got to do is cut steaks out of them. Well, I can teach anyone to do that pretty easy, but teaching them how to utilize and break down a whole carcass nose to tail is a whole different aspect. And then also teaching them how to communicate that with their customers and how to advise them how to fabricate, or if they're a direct to consumer rancher like us that are selling to the public, maybe even help them, because that's what we do at Hometown Meats all the time, is guide our producers on doing a cut sheet that's more effective and more basically to drive their revenues higher. And we're going to be looking to offer that and to help coach someone in that career path.
That's awesome. I mean, going back to the Slim said, you know, giving the American rancher a voice, giving them a platform. Going back to what Jason said about, you know, actually recording content and posting the content so you get more reach out of it. It's such an interesting balancing act that, you know, I've like, obviously my upbringing probably couldn't be farther than the American rancher. But what I've seen from my perspective is this failure of interpersonal communication, this failure of like real human connection, like the insidious spread of like horrible incentives in the social media world and the internet world. Obviously a failure of our institutions, failure of our food, but just to, on the social media thing, it's something I battle with, right? Because my focus on Bitcoin education is the same idea. Like the reason I do what I do in the Bitcoin education space is because I feel that no one else is doing it. I don't like doing things that other people are doing. I'd rather lift someone else up that's doing really well. But I feel compelled to do it because I want the education out there. But at the same time, I personally would prefer to just never sign on to Twitter again.
Yeah.
And it's this weird balancing act. And it's something when, as I talk to ranchers, like it's one of the reasons why it's so broken is because the immediate reaction is really to just ignore the bullshit. Let me just focus on what I do. Ignore all this noise, ignore all this corruption. But if you do that, then you just get left behind. So you're like, you're forced to play the game to an extent, right? But you don't want to get captured by the game.
Well, and that's easy to do, to get captured by the game. And to put, once again, into perspective, I wasn't even on Twitter. I wasn't on social media when I started the Beef Initiative, really. You know, a little bit before it, of course. But the one reason I did get on social media was because I needed to find a group of people, and I knew who that was. It was going to be basically the Bitcoiners. So you do have a target. You know, you have a target market to start off something with. And one thing that ranchers don't have time to be TikToking all day, you know, and that's what some people do.
Well, I have a line. I have a line that I will not cross. Do not fucking use TikTok.
Exactly.
Me and Marty got into a fight over this. He says he doesn't use TikTok because his producer posts to TikTok. That's using TikTok, in my opinion.
It's
facilitating the machine.
Just because he's
paying someone else to do it does not mean he's not using TikTok.
Well, and that's, people have tried to convince me, oh, you got to get on TikTok. You know, you got to get the word out there. And Cole will be, you know, he's got freaking, I don't know how many, he was on TikTok.
Cole, you're on TikTok?
Let me rephrase that.
Should we have a long conversation about this?
No, we have a lot of followers, but. Some of my team members at KNC enjoyed making them, so I didn't really care. I had no desire to do it. I convinced them to let me do one or two videos, and oddly, they went viral. No, I think it is a brain-dead social media platform. I'm not a big fan of it personally. So
it's a balancing act. It's hard. You have way more reach on TikTok. I mean, I have... I have a friend who has 800,000 followers on TikTok.
You get a reach. I did run some data reporting off of it, but I think Twitter and really Instagram and Facebook, I've been able to be more intentional, and our sales revenues have generated higher because most people that watch TikTok is because they want to watch stupid shit.
Right. It's just the constant scroll or whatever, right?
Exactly.
It's not real engagement. And even the word engagement is a corrupted word now, but like at the core, engagement is like someone actually caring about the thing that they're interacting with, right?
And that's been, you know, you were bringing this up, and I think Jason and I as producers see this really heavy. One of the biggest problems our industry is guilty of in the cattle business is we alienated ourselves because we were being alienated.
Right.
And when we have the corporate packers and the pharmaceutical companies telling us, oh, well, you're going to have to do this program this way, this program that way, because the general public don't like what you do. Well, we already, as producers, create this preconceived notion that if we try to get on social media or do education, that the general public hates us. And in fact, it wasn't that. The general public didn't even know who we were. And so we're having to reacclimate the perception with ranchers and get them comfortable with going out and explaining what they do and not being so defensive. We talked about this, us drinking a beer last night, but we've got to learn that we can be transparent and to show everything of what we do, because for once we're actually not having to play defense. We have a following of people, and it's getting bigger and bigger every day. COVID drove that. It drove people to say, oh man, these corporate companies can't provide food. My local grocery store ran out. Wonder where it comes from. You know, do they make milk in the back of the dairy aisle? And so they're starting to ask questions, and it has been the perfect storm for us and perfect timing to get back out and really show people what we do. It's not a bragging thing. We want transparency so that they're comfortable just saying, you know what, I don't have to go to the grocery store for this product, or hey, you know what, it's worth paying extra value for a quality product and not eating cheap subsidized food.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, we were taught growing up, don't say anything because one of these big organizations is going to go after you. One of these animal rights groups, whatever, right?
Right.
So the national and international organizations, actually what they were doing is they were forcing capture on us so they could push their own agendas and push their own profitability and keep us out of the fight. Well, now that we have the technology that we have to share what we do with more and more people all the time, it's starting to shift the other way. And then grassroots organizations like the Beef Initiative. I mean, we have 110 producers as members of the Beef Initiative now. So we have a place where a consumer can do a search and look for producers in their state or in their region, all in one place. And we're always talking to more producers and trying to get them to come on to the Beef Initiative as well. It's like, this is like the...
I mean, it was like 110 producers and almost like, it's been like a year, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Like we went from actual three, moving, right?
Yeah, from 3 to 110 in a year.
And amazing. Two of the first ones, were, of course, was KNC Cattle and Rick Ranches.
Right.
And we all talked, and I said, hey, I can scrape this internet, and we can put a lot of people in here and see what happens. But we all agreed, it's like, we're going to do this holistically based on transparency.
Grassroots, organic.
That's all we can do, and that's all we're ever going to do within the Beef Initiative. And that's the beautiful thing about it, because, you know, I always have to say this. This is not a damn marketing plan. This is market access to the type of education that you never had before. And that education brings a lot of quality character to it as far as, you know, people living in authenticity and, in, you know, with some integrity, you know, the way that every one of us was raised, that is the core foundation of how we work. And that's something that has been lost on the American public. And so whenever you say you're going to give the American rancher again, it's not because they need to yell loud. It's because they need to have some clarity as far as the general public knowing what this lifestyle is about. There's a lot of nuances that come into this. There's a lot of basically answers that, yeah, it starts with beef, but it also goes into how to steward your life, your family, your friends, your relationships, your communities. And it has a lot of power because this is how we came here. This is how we got here, was through our food that was very freaking, you know, Texas led the nation at one time as far as feeding the nation in the late 1800s. I want people to know that. And where were these nodes built? Well, they were built out in Colorado. They were built throughout Texas through the cattle drives. It's no different than today. We're just doing it in a different way. We're not out on the damn trail, but we are. And it's up to, you know, my messaging and in my structure of content that I'm going to deliver is going to paint that picture that this is time to be a new modern day cattleman. And these guys right here are leading that.
I love it. So what are we doing? What are we doing later today with the U.S. Cattlemen's Association? This is a new one.
Well, it's historical is what it is. And they kind of just, you know, brought it up right there. Transparency, you know, how far do we push the transparency today sitting on a stage with all the, you know, U.S. Cattlemen's Association producers across this nation? It's always it's a tightrope. We understand that. And this has never happened before as far as, you know, here we are. Some, you know, local producers, ranchers, Bitcoiners, and what we have is some proof of work, but we don't want to be braggadocious about this. Once again, we just want to be transparent of why we're up on that stage today. Why is it that we think that people need to hear, you know, this merging?
So Slim, whenever you ask me to do something, I just respond yes.
And I appreciate that. So because that's... and I won't ever abuse that, Matt.
Yeah, we'll see. Don't trust verify. Like 2 months ago or 3 months ago, you're like, coming into Nashville, we're going to do the U.S. Cattlemen's Association annual meeting. Do you want to do it? I said yes right away. I had no idea what I was agreeing to. Like, who is our audience today? Like, who will be at the event?
Well, it kind of goes back to Kerrville, and both of these guys were in Kerrville too, and we didn't know who was going to be there. But one thing we're going to have is we're going to have some people there that are basically producers. You can call them, you know, all the way from regenerative will be there, but you can call all the way to, you know, we call them commodity cowboys, whatever you want to say. There's going to be a very diverse group of people as far as there's going to be policymakers there. There's going to be the United States, you know, government representatives there. There's going to be local producers that are all across the nation. This is the first time I've ever been to a U.S. Cattlemen's Association convention. I know that both Jason and Cole are part of it. So I'll kind of let them kind of speak to what they think that they'll see and in their approach to it. Because I asked them, I said, hey, man, do you guys want to sit up on that stage? And, you know, we have to be a little bit not suspect, but aware that maybe we were going into the belly of the beast of these pharmaceutical companies that actually do represent a lot of people in the United States.
Yeah, they have a very strong hold in the cattle industry, no different than they do in America or in human pharmaceuticals. But I think most of it's just going to be producers. It's going to be ranchers. You do have special interest groups that'll attend, and you're going to have representatives from
I'm sure some of the pharmaceutical companies, the feed companies, the chemical companies, we're going in kind of sort of, I guess, is a black sheep in this type of environment, because we do things different, and change is always scary.
Right.
But we're not, I think we're just trying to provide perspective of another way in which ranchers can seek profitability and have control, or more control over what that profitability looks like, and not corporate America dictating what that looks like. I think that's...
Would you say it's almost like building bridges with the mainstream producer industry?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, spot on. And that's what we're trying to do. It's hard because, you know, Jason is a first generation rancher. There are days where I wish I had actually started the same direction that he did, because I came from the traditional commercial cattle side of the operation. And for listeners, they're like, well, what the hell does that mean? It means for generations, we followed a pharmaceutical protocol, a feed protocol. We sent ship cattle to feed yards. We sold cattle to feed yards. We did everything in a way that is different than what the Beef Initiative is designed. But it took, on the opposite side of it, I'm kind of glad I did. I came up that way, because it also gives me another perspective, because I come from a very close culture of being engulfed, and that's the only way that you can do things.
Right.
And so
I remember, I think Weldon Warren of Holy Cow Beef had a very similar journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, where they were almost told, like, this is how you do things. This is the new way of doing things.
Yep.
Because his rancher lineage, or his producer lineage, goes back before they were doing that as well. So, like, it started in, you know, this sustainable regenerative agriculture kind of movement. And then, like, the big ag and all the big schools and whatnot were like teaching them all these new technologies that you should use, and you know, like kind of watched the corruption happen and then came back to the roots.
Yeah. It's kind of a joke. It's like, you know, they taught us in college, yes, we believe in rotational grazing, but as you rotationally graze, you need to make sure to use Monsanto 22D fertilizer while you rotate those pastures. So yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah. And you know, and White Oak Pastures, the Harris family, has a very similar story, you know, that great granddad and granddad did it a specific way. And then the fertilizer dealer came in and gave Will's dad, Will Harris's dad, two bags of fertilizer and said, go spread this on your least productive ground and we'll be back in 2 weeks. And so for the following 50 years, they put synthetic fertilizer on every single acre of ground they owned, just because it grew grass so well, or cotton or peanuts or corn or whatever it happened to be, you know. And Will had an epiphany, you know. He was like, the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico and all of the degradation of soil and land and everything that goes with what we're doing, we got to do something different, you know? And so for the last 25 years, he went back to the way that his great grandfather and grandfather did it, with using animal impact and compost and all of those processes. And it is amazing. You know, we had our third Beef Initiative conference down there at White Oak Pastures in Bluffton, Georgia, and being able to spend that time down there and pick Will and his daughter's brains about what they do and why they do it, and the net benefit, positive reaction from the community, from the land, the soil, the health of their animals, the health of their business. It really reinvigorated me to go home and just keep doing what we do, because there's so much potential if you're willing to put in the legwork that comes with being that type of regenerative farmer and rancher.
White Oak is an interesting case study. I mean, I discovered White Oak before I met Slim or knew the Beef Initiative existed years ago. I mean, he basically set the standard for this idea of like a direct to consumer producer model, right? Where you have a relationship without a middleman in between. which is extremely empowering for producers. But one thing I noticed recently that they started doing is historically the majority of their business has been shipping direct to consumer, but the shipping costs are quite expensive. So they have and this reminded me of what you're doing with the grant funding, is they have a program where if you buy a certain amount of beef, you can come down during the week and you can stay overnight at the ranch, pick up your meat, and then you go home with it. You don't pay the shipping cost. And I think they don't even charge you for the night because you're saving on the shipping cost and because they have extra capacity on their land during the week because people like coming on weekends.
Well, and that was another one of the things that they were talking about. Then you're going to shop in their store,
right?
While you're there, you're going to support the local community in the little town of Bluffton, Georgia. So like, it's a win, win, win.
And you become a more loyal customer too.
Absolutely.
Because right. You actually shake your rancher's hand.
Once again, going back, this is a lifestyle and you can eliminate all the, you know, I always call it fear porn out there, all the noise, as you just said earlier, and that's what people are yearning for, is to have that market access. Well, one of the ways that Will Harris gives market access is exactly what basically both Jason and Cole now has created itself. That market access has been bottlenecked through the processing centers.
Right.
You know, with Will Harris, he gets to process his own animals right there at Bluffton, Georgia. Now Cole Bolton gets to process all of his cattle, all of his product right there in Luling, Texas.
So there's a little bit of controversy in the industry with his model, right? Because he's fully vertically integrated, but he doesn't share the processing center. Is that
Well, there's been some backlash towards Will towards that, even yeah. some people in the regenerative movement.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that's something that it can be argued, or, you know, it's something that he leveraged into because he was basically one of the first ones to do that.
Right.
So yeah, there's something to be said for that, is having that conversation. But the one thing that we have to understand is it's a net positive move forward for him to be able to decrease that bottleneck within our food supply.
I'm kind of curious. I mean, since we have Cole here, like, and you just opened, that's your first processing center you opened, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you think about it? Are you thinking about it as a vertically integrated processing center for yourself? Are you trying to, you know, enable other producers to use your processing center? Like, how do you think about that as you kind of grow?
Well, for us, you know, there's a couple different models we could take. I'm more of a gambler, so I'm not saying it's a great thing, but we went all in up front and built a much larger facility than what's needed and will probably be needed for some time, because our model is driven to where it can service both my own vertical integration, but it's built to service other producers. We designed our whole program around, you know, 70% of our production being for other producers and 30%.
That's awesome.
And hope to stick that way.
Also a little bit of a gambler.
Yeah. Yeah.
The first step is admitting it.
Yes. You
know? Exactly. One cool thing about that Cole told me from the beginning with that is, you know, 70% of other producers coming in, that gives them opportunity to change their protocols into the regenerative movement.
Right.
This is a slow step. This is a generational change. This is part of the education, not only for the consumers, but it's going to be the education for the producers. Sometimes they don't really, you know, they're not going to say, hey, I don't want to do this crap anymore as far as following the pharmaceutical protocols, right?
Right.
And so now Cole's been a very big advocate as far as like, this is a slow step into this new direction. And once again, that bottleneck has been the processing centers, from the multinationals now to somebody like Cole and Clyde there in Luling, is they're giving a rancher producer to wake up to a new day. And they're saying, well, man, well, he's having luck and he's basically making more margins because he controls his processing. That's something that's kind of lost on the American people, because every time we are buying from the supermarket, what we're doing is we're supporting those multinationals and the bottleneck for what he's trying to open up.
Well, I think more than anything, one of the sad things is, you know, through the Build Back Better program, there was going to be all this grant money available to build all these processing centers. And harsh reality to the listeners, that wasn't the case. You know, everything for our own facility, we've self-funded this. And my partner, Clyde Somerlotti, he owns a 2-bar C Angus in Luling. And, you know, no different than his program, he focuses on raising bulls and cows for production. And that's his heart and soul. And then we bring his calf crop and follow our protocols in the meat program. Where I'm going with that is, you know, as we were building it, we're getting calls, even now that we're open, every couple of weeks of processors that are selling. Because when you become a fed plant, I was telling these guys last night, it's like anything an inspector sees that they want to change, it's going to cost you at least $1,000. It don't matter what it is.
Right.
And it gets so encumbersome and
classic
expensive.
Bullshit.
And they make it extremely difficult. Whereas if you have a large plant like a JBS or a Tyson, hell, you can just pay attorneys to go handle that crap.
Right. They have a team of lawyers.
Exactly.
I mean, like, I'm biased by my perspective. But I see so much overlap with the open source movement. I mean, the Bitcoin movement, but also the greater open source movement and, what you gentlemen are working on. And it's, you see a ton of regulatory capture, you see burdensome regulation that results in centralization of an industry that's completely captured. It becomes too expensive for competitors to come in. The established big guys all have massive teams of lawyers. They know who to pay off. They know how to play the system to their advantage. And then as a result, the consumer gets wrecked. And then the people that are aware of it start to get really pessimistic and kind of doomer outlook on the world. And then to me, the source of my optimism is education and tools when people realize the need. And so we've already talked about the education side, but I would say like setting up processing centers that aren't part of this, you know, corrupt system is on the tools side, right? It's your producer. It's like you see the need. We don't have to convince producers that they're getting absolutely screwed in the current system. A lot of them are already aware of it. More of them become aware of it every day as they continue to get burned. And at that point, they're looking for some kind of opportunity, some kind of way out. And that's where the education and tools come in.
Yeah, I think it's of the utmost importance. And I'm happy. I'm going to keep fighting that battle. Being a fed plant for us is important for producers, especially if you want to ship across state lines. And so you have no alternative but to do that. But, you know,
that must be like there's a ton of red tape about shipping across state lines.
It is. It is. And all the liability, interestingly, always falls against the producer.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that I think is the hardest with all of this is, you know, we were talking about social media earlier, and you get so many keyboard warriors that either are trying to lift you up and tell you great job, and that turns around as the same person is like, oh, you charge $8 to $10 a pound on your product. I support small business, but I'm gonna have to go to the local grocery store because that's cheaper. So, you know, people need to pick, in my opinion, what side of the ledger you want to be on. Do you want to support regenerative? Do you want to support local? Do you want to support your communities, or do you want to keep subsidizing? And we're starting to find a network of folks that understand that value. But I hope they also understand it. It does make our margin a little bit better. But if you want to calculate what a living wage is, probably don't want to be a rancher because you can't calculate time. And if you put time into it, we're never going to, any of us producers, see a whole lot of profitability.
And time is the most scarce thing.
Well, yeah, and that's just it, you know, and I'm sat down with a couple of different people recently, and they're like, you need to actually start paying you a living wage for the work that you do, because you're providing a service that without it, people can't live. So if you can't raise healthy, nutrient dense animal protein and help, you know, feed people, there's no, you know, sustainability in human health. And you have to think of it from that standpoint, you know. And of course, we always undervalue our time. It's like, well, I just love what I do. I love building soil. I love working on our locally adapted genetics and seeing the calves born. You know, I loved raising my kids on a ranch, you know. there's one of those little sound bites that, you know, I'm not raising kids, you know, I'm raising you guys to be motherfuckers. I want you to go out, you know, and like be the change that we want to see. I want you to lead your communities no matter what. And that's what we did. You know, our kids they're a force to be reckoned with, good, bad, or indifferent.
You've raised some good kids, Jason.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, and as long as I'm not the recipient of their intensity, it's really pretty good. But those people are right. I mean, we have to look at it like we have to pay ourselves a living wage because we're doing important work. And that's been really hard for me because my concentration oftentimes is I want to get that meat in as many people's freezers as I can. And oftentimes I sell myself short, which I think we can do that. I think you have the people that are affluent enough that they can afford to actually pay what it's worth. And then the people who can't, I will continue to subsidize them and take care of those people that I think need it the most.
Well, it's a combination, right? It's a combination of broken incentives. And then it's a combination of good people have trouble actually valuing themselves. Like you have to value yourself first.
Yeah.
And you have to set, you know, you have to set the point. I mean, I see this all the time, just in every facet of life, of just people, good people that get taken advantage of because, you know, the people that lack integrity are the ones taking advantage of everyone else. So, you know, you got to actually stand up for yourself, right? You got to stand up for yourself and stand up for the people you care about.
And one way we're going to be able to do that is in the past, a lot of ranchers, you know, there's been a competition, right? And here we have Jason and Cole sitting at the same table. They are overall, you know, their intentions and their protocols and everything are on the same path line, but they have two different ways that they're operating in the ranching industry in the United States of America. Jason is feeding around, you know, his valley there in Colorado. Right. That's what he wants to do. Cole, on the other hand, well, you know, through the Beef Initiative and through Hometown Meats, K&C Cattle, 2BRC Ranch, that's a big collective of, hey, let's supply beef across the United States because that's what's in demand right now. We right. want to be able to do that. Whenever you have these different types of levels of distribution and market access, the beautiful thing about it is that we now, with this collective spirit and basically coordination and collaboration, we're going to educate in a way. It's like, we're not going to let people compare our products to that freaking subsidized, commoditized beef that's sold in the supermarket. Right there, it's our responsibility to kind of, okay, you want transparency? That's a dumbass question that you just asked about.
Set the narrative.
Hell yeah. And we're going to start doing that in 2023 because actually that is basically, you know, Bitcoiners like to say that's violence. Well, what now is this ignorance that is perpetuated into basically our consumer model when it comes to our food? We get to say no more. Okay, that's a bad comparison whenever you're saying, hey, half a cow is $11.99 a pound. Is that a good deal? You don't even start with those type of questions. You're going to learn how to ask the right kind of questions.
Right. So we have Cardiff Tube in the comments saying, can I buy beef online and get it shipped with Bitcoin?
Yeah, the Beef Initiative right now, we've probably done with my partnership with Cole, K&C, I think we're between $400,000 and $500,000 worth of beef has now been shipped through the Beef Initiative.
But so how does that how does that work? What's the best flow for someone who is listening?
You go to thebeefinitiative.com and the first big thing you're going to see is buy beef box.
Buy the boxes.
Yeah, get the box. Or if you want to, you can get subscription. And so it's up to you as the consumer. We're giving those two offerings as far as multiple different ways of getting a beef box that'll suit your.
And then, of course, you can download the Oshi app, right? You can do it through the Oshi app.
You can do it through Oshi app as well.
Yes. Pay with Bitcoin, get sats back.
Mm-hmm.
But then Jason also said there's 110 producers as part of the Beef Initiative. So what is that like a list on beefinitiative.com?
Yeah, it's just a regular searchable index.
But then you have to do your own proof of work. And
you have to call that rancher. You have to contact it, shake them in their hand digitally.
And they don't all accept Bitcoin. Some of them are there.
Some of them aren't.
Have to pay gold
coins. Most of them are wanting to. You know, once again, it's the education. And we're giving them the technology stack that they have access to that we've developed.
Well, I'll take tractor trailer loads of hay. So that's something that I'm always looking for. So if you Fair want enough. To trade hay for beef, we can do that too.
I love the barter system. It's my favorite.
So yeah, you can go to beefinitiative.com. It's up to you. We've given you every option.
What's the vision? I mean, is the vision grander than that? Is the vision something to the level of go to beefinitiative.com and you kind of order there and it just connects you with the closest producer or something like that? Or
there's going to be a lot of people that don't really want, there's going to be two facets here. There's going to be people that really want to just buy their beef through the Beef Initiative.
Yeah.
And that's going to be fantastic. There's different types of consumers.
Because the problem, it's something that I battle with in Bitcoin and the open source movement, right? Because there's a massive trade-off between convenience and freedom. It just always happens. It's like sure. The more convenient option is always the less freedom-oriented option. But also people just, doesn't matter how much education you give, they just want convenience, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a key balancing act there where everyone should have like the most freedom, the most sovereign options available to them, and hopefully more and more people will choose those options, right? Actually going to your local ranch, shaking their hand, developing a relationship with them. I mean, the reason I ask these questions is because even though I'm ingrained in the Beef Initiative, I've been helping you with the movement. Me and my lady have been buying our beef from a local producer in Iowa. Who's friends of friends. I met them. I know how they're producing over there. I know they care. And we just did, you know, a handshake deal with Bitcoin, no website or anything like that. But ultimately, like so it's good to have the freedom sovereign option, and we need to have those options available to people, and people should, hopefully more and more people will choose those. But also we have to, both in the Bitcoin industry and I think with the Beef Initiative, provide more convenient options for the people that, you know, maybe are a half step in, or they're getting their feet wet, or you'll get way more traction that way, right?
Well, you do. And once again, it's education, man. I've got four ranchers in my freezers right now. You know, it's kind of a joke. And I want to have 10 ranchers in my freezers. This is what's very imperative right now, is that each of us now can have this type of variety, these types of relationships, and it's all through the funnel and all through the gateway of the Beef Initiative. You know, we've got Holy Cow Beef now doing subscription and beef boxes through the Beef Initiative. Jason Rick is never going to sell beef boxes through the Beef Initiative because he don't want to.
People love the boxes.
They do. And we took advantage of the COVID thing because everybody started buying their beef in beef boxes.
Yeah, those garbage butcher boxes.
There you have it. And so once that, you know, that was a type of exploitation a lot of people don't realize that happened in the United
But that's
States.
A perfect example of the convenience thing, right? Like people it just is. Want the monthly subscription. They don't even want to pick the cuts. No. They just want just a random box. Yeah. Random box of good meat every month.
It's like a freaking Christmas present every month, you know, and that's fine. But that goes back to saying that we can't generalize this stuff anymore.
Right.
We've got to focus on the unique qualities of each one of these ranchers and everything. Every one of these ranchers that I have in my freezers that I feed my family with, every one of them has a different discussion to be had that is basically a portal hole of discovery of what beef is and what the cattle ranching industry is in the United States. What it is existing right now that nobody even understands. It goes through adding that variety. And yeah, sometimes it's going to be convenient. Sometimes it's going to be a trip, maybe a 3-day trip through Colorado to go spend the night at Jason's ranch, pick up a quarter or a half a cow. Or it's going to be going out to Luling and going and touring the hometown meats processing plant. Right. And that's the beautiful thing about this is like we don't have to have these limitations of thought anymore or market access to what is readily available. And so you look at the Beef Initiative, take 10 minutes instead of 2 minutes and kind of dive a little bit deeper into it.
You know, and that's the thing for me is if the customer that I'm looking for is someone who is that intentional person.
Right.
Like they're willing, Like I'm working my ass off every single day, other than, you know, the last 5 days I've been here hanging out with you guys, because my amazing wife and my 15-year-old son are holding down the fort while I'm gone. But I'm looking for the customer that is that next level intentional about sourcing their food, right? And I'm going to reward them with the best customer service that I can give them, but they're going to have to work at it. And that's for a couple of reasons. Number one, we're small, right?
Right.
We're only selling 40 beeves a year. And I don't know that I necessarily want to get any bigger than that.
Right.
Because everything that we do is based on what our land mass can support, due to range conditions, because of drought, snowfall, all of the different things that affect us in Western Colorado, right?
Right.
I don't have the capacity to just flip a switch, buy two
add more heads,
calves, yeah. And just it. So we're conception to plate. So it's a 30-month process from conception to butcher. And so it takes that long to steer the ship. But that's that's what sets us apart from other producers.
Right. That makes sense.
You know, and I want people to know that. And through the Beef Initiative, I've been able to communicate that. And I've also been able to connect with people who are experts in their fields, whether it's podcasting, whether it's, you know, digital production, whether it is business management, all of those things. And we can barter. We can work together. They use their expertise to help me promote my business, and they get to eat our beef in exchange for those, you know, goods and services that they're helping me with. And that's the great thing about this is I can't be an expert in everything. But I'm definitely willing to share our product with the people who are willing to help us. And that's, you know, like what Cole was saying about, we love barter. That's what made the village model work.
Right.
The last multiple hundreds of years.
Right. Value for value.
That's exactly right.
Well, gentlemen, this has been a fantastic conversation on an early Saturday morning. Well, I guess late for ranchers at 8 a.m. It's been an absolute pleasure. We do have running a seed signer workshop in a half an hour, building your own hardware wallet at Bitcoin Park with the two project leads of that open source project. One goes by the name Seed Signer, which is really confusing, and the other one is named Keith. So we should wrap up. But before we wrap up, let's finish off with some final thoughts. Slim, final thoughts.
Final thoughts is this is, this has been a fantastic year. We have tremendous support. We've pulled off a lot of events that a lot of people said we weren't going to be able to do. We have, but that's because everybody's been, you know, they've been willing to be educated. And it's been a good year to basically kind of set a new precedent. And I think today, setting up on the stage, I mean, the reason we're here is because we did get asked to be on the U.S. Cattlemen's Association panel. And so, you know, for anybody that's new coming into this, once again, this is not a generalization of our food anymore. This is education and it's market access. So learn how to shake your rancher's hand, either digitally through the Beef Initiative or individually through each of these producers that have come in. Take a moment, take a step back and refocus, point your compass in a different direction, because we're going to bring a lot of sovereign mentality to the beef industry in the United States, and it all starts today.
Love it. Thanks, Slim.
You bet.
Cole, final thoughts?
I think my challenge to all the listeners would be, you know, really search deep, find that cowboy inside of you, and help us go make a change and take back control of our own personal nutrition, our family nutrition, and make sure that we're able to support the American ranchers out there so that we can continue providing healthy, effective protein products.
Love it. Thanks, Cole. Jason, final thoughts?
Final thoughts. I mean, like we keep saying, shake your rancher's hands. What we've found is that government cannot regulate a positive change in our lives. And so I empower everyone to get out and shake the rancher's hand, and also to vote with your dollar. I mean, support the people that are doing the things the way that you want to see it done, and support their families, support their projects, whether it's open source projects or whether it's Beef Initiative projects. I mean, get out there, get on the beefinitiative.com. You know, it is the season of giving, and you can donate directly to Washington Fund on the beefinitiative.com. And like I've been telling so many of my customers that pay in Bitcoin, I'll take your $17,000 Bitcoin all day long, because it's the long game for me. I mean, it's a store of value and a medium of exchange. And it's important to me. It's important to my family. I mean, my son, Matt, has taken him down the rabbit hole. And I love seeing his excitement for it, because I see him as a future innovator, both in the ranching industry as well as Bitcoin. And I just really want to thank you for that. And just proud to call you friend.
The feeling is mutual. I appreciate all you gentlemen. That kid of yours, Jason, is going to do, he's going to be a massive force for good. Very, very bullish. Look, freaks, ultimately, this is a movement of individuals, empowered individuals. It's going to take people to step up, take care of each other, focus on what's important, and just keep pushing forward against as much resistance as we have. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. I'm cautiously optimistic. I think people will get burned, and then they will learn. They'll realize the need. And then we just need to have education and tools available for them. Just another shout out. If you go to beefinitiative.com, you click that donate button, you can donate. The panels that we had at the park will be posted to our Bitcoin Park podcast feed. So if you want to listen to them, you just search Bitcoin Park in your favorite podcast app. Once again, I am taking a holiday break after we do the seed signer workshop and present at the Cattlemen's Association. So Merry Christmas to you freaks. I will see you in the first week of January. Subscribe on your favorite app. You'll get notified, or just wing it. And I'll see you in January. But I just wanted another huge shout out for the gentleman who joined us. I mean, I really do appreciate you guys. And I think this is, we're just getting started, and it's the start of something beautiful. So let's not pull our feet off the gas anytime soon and just keep pushing forward.
Yeah, thanks. We're going to hit it. Let's do it, Matt. Appreciate you.
Cheers. Thanks, freaks. Thanks, gents. Stay humble, stack sats.